I'm Ann Kinsel, your Monday host for Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Working with me is Interim Station Manager Mike Murphy. So, the weather, unbelievable. It looks like a high of 60 today and a low of 30. This is good news. No Long Janes or Long Johns in our near future. We're going to start out this morning with the news from Dennis Hart, compiled from publications all over Central Iowa.
The coronavirus, doubts about whether next year's statewide vote would be counted fairly in Iowa, and record profits for the John Deere Company all made big news around the state on Thanksgiving week. First, the coronavirus. The number of new virus cases in Iowa kept going up last week. Last Wednesday, the state reported 10,643 new cases over the previous 7 days. That was the first time that many cases had occurred in 1 week since September. The state's 14-day positivity rate was 10.4%. The state also reported 86 more deaths from the virus, bringing to 7,354 the total number of people who have died from it since the pandemic started. Hospitalizations due to the virus were also up. 623 people were in the hospital because of the coronavirus, 79 more than the week before. The rising number of coronavirus hospitalizations, coupled with the spike in flu cases, prompted hospital officials to say the healthcare system could get strained if Iowans don't start taking extra precautions, including wearing masks and practicing social distancing inside public places and limiting gatherings. About 54% of Iowans are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. Meanwhile, Mercy One confirmed last week that children who received their vaccination shots at a mass vaccination clinic in Urbandale a week ago got the wrong dose. They received double the correct dose for children, but still less than the adult dose. The side effects for getting the wrong dose include a sore arm, mild fever, headache, and fatigue, but could be more pronounced. Mercy One says it's taking steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. It was also word that the Wells Fargo company had announced its employees must soon prove they're vaccinated against the coronavirus or agree to submit to regular testing. The bank says employees will have to submit photos of their vaccination card to an online company website by December 4th. Those who don't must agree to take part in Wells Fargo's testing protocols starting in January. Meanwhile, last week, word that Governor Kim Reynolds said she's confident that her use of $450,000 in federal coronavirus relief money would be approved by the U.S. Treasury. A state audit found the governor's office had not provided the necessary documentation to show the workers were substantially dedicated to responding to the virus. Also last week, word that the strike against the John Deere Company in Iowa and other states did not keep the company from posting record profits. The company earned more than $1 billion from August through October this year. That put Deere's profit for the budget year ending November 1st at nearly $6 billion. That report comes after the company resolved a 5-week strike by members of the United Auto Workers Union. The report captures only about half the strike's impact because workers walked out with about 2 weeks left in the quarter. It was also word that in addition to the 10% wage hike union workers would receive from the strike settlement, Deere's salaried workers would receive an 8% hike. And last week, the Des Moines Register released several new polls, one of them about Thanksgiving shopping. That poll showed that a majority of Iowans plan to do more shopping at local stores than in the past. 55% of the state's residents said they would patronize local stores more for their shopping than in past holiday seasons. Almost half said they would do more online shopping than in the past, and nearly half said they would buy holiday gifts earlier this year. There was also a new poll that showed that nearly one-third of Iowans doubt that next year's election results will be counted as voters intended. The poll showed that 62% of Iowa adults are confident that the results will be counted accurately, while one-third are doubtful. And like everything else in the nation these days, the results are split along party lines. 88% of Democrats say they are confident the results will be counted accurately. 47% of those who voted for Donald Trump last year say they doubt the results will be counted accurately. There was more last week, including word that a judge had ruled that an Iowa law preventing Medicaid from covering gender confirmation-related surgery violates the state's Civil Rights Act and the state constitution. The Polk County judge ruled that the part of the law that excludes coverage for surgery shall be stricken from the state's administrative code, and that the remainder of the law must be applied to allow transgender Iowans to receive coverage for medically necessary surgery. There was also word last week that the Federal Environmental Protection Agency is proposing giving oil refineries more time to meet a federal mandate to blend ethanol, biodiesel, and other renewable fuel into the nation's fuel supply. That would delay compliance for oil refineries and leaves it unclear when the EPA would set new renewable fuel blending requirements. Half of Iowa's corn crop goes to ethanol production, and the state is also a big grower of soybeans, which are used in biodiesel. There was also a report that a Polk County jury had awarded an information technology worker at the Des Moines Area Community College nearly $1.5 million in back pay. Sandra Selden had sued the college last year, alleging that she had been paid tens of thousands of dollars less than a male colleague, despite having the same title and greater responsibilities. Also last week, word that plans for what appeared to be an Amazon warehouse in Woodward have been canceled. The city council had approved site plans for a 1 million square foot warehouse last month. Taxes on that warehouse would have generated more than $3 million a year for Woodward, for the Woodward-Granger School District, and for Dallas County. There was also word that the hedge fund Alden Global Capital, one of the nation's biggest newspaper owners that has a reputation for big cost cuts and layoffs, had offered to buy the Davenport-based Lee Enterprises for about $141 million. Lee owns the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the Buffalo News, the Denver Post, and the Boston Herald, as well as dozens of smaller newspapers in more than two dozen states. It owns 10 newspapers in Iowa, including the Sioux City Journal, the Quad City Times, the Globe Gazette in Mason City, the Muscatine Journal, and the Courier in Waterloo. In Des Moines last week, where the demolition of the former Dyco factory downtown had officially wrapped up. The project cleared out long vacant toxic buildings from a Superfund site that leaders had pegged for redevelopment. And the demolition brought the Iowa Soccer Foundation one step closer to building a 6,300-seat stadium on the 43-acre site to serve as home for a USL Championship soccer team set to begin play in 2024. Also last week, a report that Iowa regulators had agreed to keep secret the names of thousands of individual landowners in the path of Summit Carbon Solutions' proposed carbon capture pipeline, saying that property owners' right to privacy outweighs the public's interest. But the Iowa Utilities Board did order Summit to disclose the names of businesses, counties, and other government entities that own land in the path of the company's proposed $4.5 billion pipeline. Summit has proposed building a 710-mile pipeline across 30 counties in Iowa to capture carbon dioxide from a dozen ethanol plants and use pressure to liquefy the emissions and transport them to North Dakota, where they would be permanently sequestered deep underground. Also last week, a Northeast Iowa company that first sought to export billions of gallons of groundwater to parched western states, but scaled back the amount after pushback, has abandoned the request altogether. The Pattison Sand Company proposal was repeatedly rejected by the State Department of Natural Resources because the Clayton County company did not demonstrate beneficial use of the water as required by law. In Norwalk last week, the city's fire department got its first female chief. Jen Porter is a 13-year veteran with that fire department, and she was sworn in as chief last Monday night. She became only the second female fire chief in the Des Moines Metro, and only the fifth in all of Iowa. In the world of college football, Iowa style this past Friday, Iowa State University defeated Texas Christian 48-14. The University of Iowa defeated Nebraska 28-21. And when Minnesota defeated Wisconsin on Saturday, that meant Iowa would get to play in the Big Ten Conference Championship game this coming weekend against Michigan. And finally, the University of Northern Iowa lost to Eastern Washington 19-9 in the first round of the Football Championship Subdivision playoffs. That meant UNI's season is over. Two more notes before I take my leave on this Monday, and both of them involve still more new Des Moines Register polls that came out last week. One was about that phrase called Iowa nice. Yes, more than half of all Iowans in the new poll think residents of Iowa tend to be unusually nice. 58% of Iowans believe that. Another 36% say there's generally no difference between our niceness and anyone else's. By the way, yes, even this is seen through the lens of political partisanship. 70% of the state's Republicans say Iowans tend to be nicer, but only 51% of Democrats and 53% of independents do. Go figure. And one more new Register poll involved In-N-Out hamburgers and the IKEA chain. Really? Seems the poll showed that one-fifth of all Iowans would be thrilled, the poll's word, not mine, to see both In-N-Out and IKEA open their first stores in Iowa. 21% want to see IKEA show up here, while 20% want to taste the thrill of an In-N-Out burger. But while In-N-Out and IKEA have their fans, other stores in the poll do as well, such as Shake Shack, Macy's, Nordstrom, and Restoration Hardware. And even though those chains have their backers, the vast majority of Iowans say they don't care one way or the other, whether those chains ever show up. So there you go. Something to chew on, or not. And that's your summary of the Thanksgiving week news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, taking off for now, but very much planning to make a return visit tonight live at 7 on KHOI's Capital Week, where Laura Bellin and I will hash out what's been making political news around the state and what it means for all of us. Then I'll come back to Local Talk again Friday morning at 7, and I'll bring word about what makes news in Ames. I hope you can be here for all of it, and I hope you have a great week.
Okay, now that we're all caught up on the news, we're going to move into our next segment with Sarah Nelson. Sarah, you're going to talk to us about the perennial Christmas favorite, the Nutcracker. Before we get to that, what is your job exactly?
My job is I serve as a state STEM specialist, so I oversee STEM education for K through 12 youth for Iowa State Extension and Outreach, Iowa 4-H.
Okay, so I get that. But from STEM to Nutcracker, how did we get there?
Well, you know, it's the 40th anniversary of the Nutcracker, so we were excited to work with Stevens to partner on presenting a mini performance, but then also talk about all of the STEM jobs and things related to STEM that you can find in the theater. So we have two main things that we have. We have a mini performance for youth on December 10th at 12:30. And then we also have two challenges. They're STEAM challenges, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, around costume designing and then also prop designing.
Okay, so STEAM, and the Nutcracker.
Yep.
What do you find in the Nutcracker that kids will see themselves as STEM or STEAM people?
Yeah, we first want to promote both STEM and the arts, and so then we promote them separately, but then we also look at the connections between them. And so as the youth are, you know, watching the show, we're also going to highlight the jobs that are kind of behind the scenes, the light board, the soundboard, you know, you kind of name it, the stage manager, all of those kinds of things, the costume designer. What we talk about is not only do they combine the arts, of course, but they also have those elements of STEM, from math, you know, sewing, all of those kinds of things, to designing and building, lots of engineering there. So we just try to highlight the connections so that if we have a youth that, you know, really likes STEM and really likes theater, we can highlight, hey, you know what, this might be a job for you, a career for you later in life.
Now, the Nutcracker's been around a long time. What's your involvement been in it? Have you had any involvement beyond your work with 4-H and Extension?
Yes, so I am actually Frau, the mom in the Nutcracker, on the weekend, December 11th and 12th. And I have danced in it for about 10 years. And one of the things that I noticed as I look on the stage at all of the performers is there's a lot of dancing scientists out there. A lot of people that really like, you know, STEM, but then also really love the arts. And so this was also something we wanted to highlight, that even if you go into, you know, a STEM career, the arts can still be a part of your life in lots of different ways, whether you're performing or just supporting. But yes, I've been in about 10 years. My whole family one time was on stage. My daughters and my husband is the dad. And so we dance together on stage and we really enjoy it. It adds so much to our lives.
Wow. A dancing woman. So how do you get prepared for this? Is there a lot of rehearsal? How did you get selected? Is this part of some volunteer theater company? I have to admit, complete ignorance here. Help me out.
So this year, the Iowa Youth Ballet is presenting the 40th anniversary of the Nutcracker Ballet. Robert and Miyoko Thomas are the artistic directors, and they started this 40 years ago, and if I remember right, the first one was on Iowa PBS. It was such a big deal. Everyone was all dressed up, and they came to Stevens Auditorium. So if you want to take part, auditions are usually in September, and then, you know, you go, you audition, and you wait, you know, for your letter or for your email saying what parts, hopefully, that you got. And so that's how it is. I've actually taken adult dance for quite a while at Robert Thomas Dance Center. I started in my 30s, and so I started later in life, but had always wanted to dance, and just absolutely love it and really appreciate all of my teachers and all of the people that I get to dance with, a lot of whom are my colleagues here, actually, at Iowa State.
So you dance year-round. This is your fitness routine.
It is, actually. I take ballet, and then I also take jazz. And we actually do perform in the recital, too. We have our adult classes performing. And I tell you what, it's just, to me, it's just pure fun. You know, if you want to dance, it's never too late. Join in. We have all ages dancing, so I really would encourage you to find a studio and just get up there and dance. You do not have to do recital if you don't want to.
Back to the Nutcracker. I mean, this is the 40th anniversary here, but the piece has been around a lot longer, hasn't it?
Yeah, the late 1800s, I believe. I wish I knew the exact date. I believe it was first performed in Russia, and then it kind of spread out from there. And it, you know, it's had a long history here in the United States also, and it's really become a favorite holiday, you know, tradition for a lot of people. And so, yes, the Nutcracker, even here in central Iowa, 40 years, you know, that is quite amazing that we have had such a successful run of the Nutcracker Ballet. We always have two professional dancers dance with us also. This year it's Tanya Lynn Trombley and Frederick Davis. And so we're very excited to have them dancing with about 200 community dancers for the Nutcracker Ballet.
200?
Yeah, it's really fun. But when you see everyone in one space, you go, holy moly, you know, it's just a lot of people. But it's really fun. There's a lot of parts, not only for young, you know, children, but also then for adult dancers. And so when you add it all up, yes, it comes to about 200. And then there's different casts also. Not everybody does all three shows. Sometimes you'll do one, two, and sometimes you get lucky and get to do all three.
So what's the age range of the 200 dancers typically?
I would say I think you have to be, and I might be wrong, but I think you have to be 8 to audition. It's either 6 or 8. I'm sorry, I can't quite remember. And then, you know, it goes up to, I don't know, maybe 60s, people in their 60s. And so we have quite an age range there.
So there's a stage manager for this? I mean, the concept of herding cats comes to mind. 200 people to get on and off a stage in a show that lasts, what, how long?
The show, the longer show is about, with intermission, about 3 hours, I believe. And then our matinee on the December 10th is only 45 minutes. We've really taken it and condensed the show down. But, yes, Iowa Youth Ballet has the longer show. And then Iowa 4-H is sponsoring the youth matinee. So on the shorter one, I'm actually the director on that one.
Congratulations, I think.
Yeah, no, it is. It's been wonderful.
So the shorter one is geared towards, what, smaller children? So their attention span?
Yeah, so I think a good age range for that we thought was about 2nd through 4th grade. Of course, you can go up or down, you know, to... But really what we wanted to do was showcase, you know, again, of course, the arts and STEM, but we also wanted to showcase ballet for them and give them a small taste of it in the hopes that maybe they would either take classes later if they're really interested or maybe attend that longer performance on the weekend. And so that's our hope. We really had to, it's actually quite hard to condense a show down into 45 minutes, but we did it. With the help of the ISU Theater Department here, we have a storyteller that comes on stage, and then she kind of sets up the scene, and then we cut away to the scene, and then we come back to the storyteller.
Now, I don't know about your experience with your kids, but I remember when ours were very small, the youngest one was scared to death at the Nutcracker. Maybe he had a Nutcracker phobia. I don't know. But have you experienced that with little children being kind of, I don't know about this?
It can be. It really depends on how they adapted the show. And so I will say, I think the one at Stevens is very family friendly. And I will admit, when we did our battle scene here on the matinee, we went for comedy versus, you know, scariness. And so I really don't think anyone will have any issues with it. But yes, I have seen sometimes some costumes actually can be you know, a little bit at first, you know, scary. But if you kind of prep your kids for it, hopefully they wouldn't have any issues for it. But one of Stephen's, definitely not that way. I think nobody will have any trouble with it.
Now back to STEM and STEAM education. How are the schools doing with integrating the arts, shall we say, music, literature, visual artistry, into these kind of programs? Do you see that being done, or is it falling by the wayside?
I see it being done and taking off now. I see a lot of educators really interested in it and doing a good job. And the way I think to do high-quality STEAM is to work with an artist, a professional artist, and then, you know, add in your STEM or STEAM, you know, expertise alongside that artist. Because when you add in someone who's trained in whatever it is, you know, you're kind of going for, whether it's sculpture, dance, singing, acting, it just really changes the learning process and energizes it. And I can't even explain, like, how joyful it is when you add in that professional artist, if you can. Or maybe just look for a high quality, you know, curriculum that someone else has done. Maybe get a parent involved, you know, somebody. You never know what talents are hidden in the families that you work with, that's for sure.
That's true. You know, we want to look at children as being well-rounded once they move on to the next level of education. But sometimes it seems as if with the STEM, there's been a focus on what are you going to do as a career, which mm-hmm. which always seems kind of funny with a 7-year-old child, because who knows who they are at 7, right? How do you think that's playing out?
I don't know. To me, I just want to give youth opportunities to participate in STEM. Whether or not they go on, you know, to a career is, of course, totally up to them. But in that process of participating in STEM, you learn a lot about problem solving, you know, how to work with others, just how science, technology, engineering, and math work. And so even if you decide later on, you know what, I'd rather do this, that's wonderful. But then you know how it works and you know the processes. And so then maybe later, if you read a news article about science, technology, engineering, or math, you understand the processes that they went through to get, you know, to where they are. And so when I think about schools that are really doing some high-level STEM, I get really excited, because typically it's something that's really active, really hands-on, minds-on. And that is where a lot of good learning comes in. And not only for STEM, but then also maybe for social studies, for arts, you know, for literacy, reading, writing, you know, speaking, listening. And so I see really good things happening. I think Iowa has a really strong STEM education program. And I really just keep pushing. You know, I just keep pushing. I want everyone to have these opportunities. And so we really are looking for places that maybe don't have as many opportunities and trying to get in there and support more STEM or STEAM education there. And I maybe was long-winded and went in a circle, but I hope I answered your question.
No, you did. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, I'm kind of jealous, because when I went to school, we didn't have things like STEM and STEAM. And we were taught science very much in the abstract. And so we didn't get much out of it. Everybody in my age group probably remembers trying to learn math concepts by being told that two cars were heading towards each other and when would they pass each other. And we could figure this out by a mathematical formula. And I kept thinking, why do I care? Right? I don't care if two cars are coming, you know. And all of it just seemed sort of to hang on to nothing. And so, hence, I became a lawyer, right? So I could but I would have loved to have been taught science, math, and all kinds of those parts of the curricula in a way that was relevant to the world that I saw around me.
Yeah. We've had a big change in education, especially science education, over the last, you know, 10 or so years, in that we want youth to look out and see a phenomena, something in their lives that they either have a question about, and then we dig into that, or maybe a problem that they want to solve. And I tell you what, when you base it in the real world, kind of like what you were talking about, it changes everything. Or if you have at the end a big project, like a performance, a mini Nutcracker performance, it makes it all real. And so if you make an invitation to it, all of a sudden you realize, oh my gosh, it's actually going to go to somebody. Somebody's going to read this. If you have a problem you're trying to solve, then you share your answer, you know, with others, and it becomes a part of the solution. And so everything just becomes real. It has context. And I think it changes everything. And it's, I know exactly what you're talking about. I had some of those similar things. You know, it was a very disconnected sometimes learning experience. But if we can connect it to lives, to communities, you know, to what's going on in the world, everything, to me at least, and to all the students that I work with, all the youth I work with, becomes much more engaging, much more relevant, and much more exciting, too.
Now, circling back to the Nutcracker, how do you think that children learn best? Do they learn best by observing things like the Nutcracker? Do they, even though they may not participate directly into that, how does that play into their learning?
So for the Nutcracker, we also wanted to showcase a lot of different ages and a very diverse group also, so that they could potentially see themselves on stage. And so in this case, I think for ballet, you know, and sometimes for these STEAM professions, you first kind of need to see it and become aware of it. And then my hope would be that we could take the next step. I sometimes see a lot of education on a continuum. You know, what's the first step maybe for somebody that wants to learn this concept or maybe become this profession later on? And of course, we often say you have to see it to be it. And so if you can see some of these things in action, it may be the catalyst to you thinking about a career in that or taking another class in it or maybe just even attending another show later on. And so, again, I kind of see everything on a continuum. So if they come to the Nutcracker, one, I hope they've experienced the challenges, the costume challenge or that design, the prop challenge. And then they come and they see it kind of all in action. And then, you know, two, just seeing a performance. For some of them, it might be their first time that they've seen, in particular, ballet. And so, again, providing these opportunities that we hope really spur interest and potential learning later is, I think, what Iowa 4-H is all about, too.
So tell us again when the shows are.
So the mini matinee is December 10th at 12:30. It is free. Registration is on the Stevens website. And then the main performances, I believe, are December 11th and 12th. I hope I have that right, Saturday and Sunday. One at 1:30, the other at 7 on that Saturday. And then I believe Sunday is 1:30. I apologize if I have the times wrong. That is a wonderful show. And really fun. Again, that's the one that has the 200 or so community members in it. And so please join us. We'd love to have you come to our holiday party. I think it's a great holiday tradition and also a great family event for everybody at Stevens. And Stevens is just a wonderful partner in all of this. We can't thank them enough.
Now, can people just show up or do they have to get tickets beforehand?
So for all of the performances, you'll need tickets or registration ahead of time. So the Friday one is an online registration, just so they have a good count of people. And then the tickets are, of course, at the ticket office for Stevens for the Saturday and Sunday shows. And please know that there are also online options for all of the performances. And so if you, for, you know, many reasons, maybe would like to attend an online or virtual performance of the Nutcracker, that's an opportunity this year really to celebrate that 40th anniversary and get it, you know, out there and have people that are maybe farther away also have a chance to see some of their family dancing on stage at Stevens.
Well, Sarah Nelson, thank you so much for telling us about the 40th anniversary celebration of the Nutcracker this year. We'll be excited to see you and up to your 200 cohorts on stage dancing to this holiday classic.
I am so excited. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay, everybody, it's your chance, a 40th anniversary performance of the Nutcracker at CY Stevens. And now, our own Pat Schlarbaum has interviewed Iowa's former poet laureate, Mary Swander, who has started a new contest, a bad poetry contest. I'm pretty sure I qualify for an entry somewhere that I could come up with really fast. But let's find out what Mary Swander has in mind here.
Mary Swander, I'd like to learn more about your Great Amish Belt Loop Bad Poetry competition, and welcome to Local Talk.
Well, thank you, Pat. Yes, the Bad Poetry Contest, you can get all the details from the Ag Arts website, which is agarts.org. And in episode 19 of the podcast, Ag Arts from Horse and Buggy Land, I talk about the contest and how it came about and the rules for entry, which the number one rule is that has to be like a horrible poem. Any good poems will be immediately eliminated.
But but as a poet laureate emeritus for the state of Iowa, how can you diverge from, or your assessment be bad poetry to good poetry? I thought just poetry is poetry.
Well, no, I have a judge. I have a judge. The judge is Ruby, the gross mommy, Ruby Yoder. And she, believe me, she knows bad poetry. And she will be judging this contest. And the entry fee is $, but if you win, you get your poem read on the podcast, and you get $, and you get a handmade belt made by the Amish harness maker. So when you enter the contest, you leave your name, email address, telephone number, and your belt size, so we can facilitate that prize.
Okay. I still, what constitutes bad poetry? How would I win this?
Oh, you could have, there's many ways you could win. Yeah, Pat, I want you to enter. You could have bad rhymes. Oh, by the way, this bad poem must contain two phrases. One is a cat yowling on the back fence, and the second phrase is a buzzard on a dead horse.
Ooh.
So I've already had some really interesting bad poems entered rhyming with fence and horse, and, you know, really horrible rhymes. And then, another way to have a bad poem is just to state the emotion. So I'm thinking of another entry that started with dismal. Yeah. And then it went on from there. Bad rhymes, if you want to rhyme it, you know, a big show of emotion that is never transmitted through imagery or metaphor. That's another good way to have a bad poem.
Okay. Cat yelling on the back fence?
Yeah, and then a buzzard on a dead horse. And if you listen to podcast number 19, you'll find out why those two phrases are required elements of this bad poem.
So your episode 19, these are podcasts. I don't want to diverge from the competition too far, but this sounds like a legacy of learning about Mary Swander world beyond just bad poet.
That's right. My bad poetry is in my world. Good poetry is also in my world. Now, but I am the co-founder and executive director of Ag Arts, which is nonprofit, trying to imagine and promote healthy food systems through the arts. And we have a podcast. And you can access this anywhere you get your podcasts, Ag Arts from Horse and Buggy Land, or just go to our website. And so that's how we keep up with our audience, our listeners, our supporters, is through the podcast.
The Great Amish Belt Loop Bad Poetry Competition, is this one of your new creations, or how many
years? This is part of my podcast world, and I was just yearning for a little interaction with my listeners, so I've set up my website so that they can just speak the poem right into the website, and it comes through loud and clear, and then we will play those bad poems as a podcast all of its own. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think we need a little more comic relief in these difficult days that we're in.
And so you feel comic relief is appropriate in these times?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think Ames needs comic relief. The whole state of Iowa needs real comic relief. So yeah. I am providing that at the moment if you want to tune in.
It sounds like you're giving it your all, your best shot here. Now, and how is it that the Amish community resonates with you so well?
Well, I live in the middle of the Old Order Amish community, and I have my studio for Ag Arts right downtown in Kelowna. It's great. I have this plate glass window right on the main street in Kelowna, and I sit here making my podcasts, and these Old Order Amish men go by, and they read my things I put in my window, and their long beards are brushing the glass, and, you know, it's here. It's part of the culture of the state.
And you're east of us here in Story County. You're over in Johnson County, south right. of Iowa City. For maybe right. some of our listeners, they're kind of new to the Midwest. The Old Order Amish in that region, does their legacy go back to the pioneer days of Iowa?
It does. It does. They were actually some of the first settlers in this area. Mm-hmm. And there are now about around 5,000 Amish Mennonites in this Kelowna area. And so it's the largest Amish settlement west of the Mississippi River.
I see.
So mm-hmm. It's pretty significant. And oh, lots of people from different parts of the state come here for various things. And one of the things is if you want a belt made, the harness maker will make it right on you. You just walk in and he measures your waist and then he pulls out a strip of leather and asks you what, you know, buckle you would like. You get to pick out your own buckle and he makes it right there. So,
how delightful is that?
It is a wonderful experience. So I was trying to bring this to the world.
Yeah.
With the bad poetry contest.
Right.
And, yeah. So don't forget that belt size, because I've gotten entries where they haven't given their belt size. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. You may have to get...
hunt them down.
Something that was not going to fit. But it sounds to you like you're covering all the basis of weaving in a community asset beyond just the craftsmanship of their lives and their right. legacy. And we're all Iowans. And what a,
no, that's right. That's
what,
right.
What a delightful form of outreach that you've hit upon.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think it'll be fun. And you can come here to Kelowna and get that belt made on the spot if you like, which would be another interesting trip for you.
Even more special. Now, do you have business hours there on Main Street of Kelowna at your shop?
It's called, I'm usually here in the mornings, and it's called Catch Me If You Can Hours. And right now, because the pandemic, I'm not opening my door yet, but you can wave at me through the window. And lots of people do. They come to the window, they knock, they want to buy a book, and I pass it out to them through the door. That's how we're working it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So you've adapted to the pandemic, proceeding with your humor. And is there anything else? What a great outreach. As you say, in these times, comic right. relief can be so essential.
No, it is. And that I've got a nice little following developing on the podcast, and people send contributions and they write me little notes like, this is so much fun. I once lived in the rural area, but, you know, now I live in, you know, wherever, Twin Cities. I get to hear from people in California, people from New York, and they said this all brings it back to me. So that is totally worthwhile.
Oh, yeah. It's very unique. It's very special to Iowa, and you're really carrying on a shining example of what Iowa outreach can be.
Oh, yeah, thank you. And I also, I also got a grant. This is the first grant for this podcast from the American Rescue Plan through the Iowa Arts Council to hire my tech person to help me with the podcast. So that's huge. I got $5,000 to keep my tech person employed.
I may not be able to include the amount but then you're not asking for money, but
I'll
probably have to double check on that. But that's a wonderful thing.
I got a grant from the Arts Council that's helping to support the podcast.
And there's growth and development there. I can only imagine how this is going to streamline and improve getting your messages out.
Right.
Mary Swander, Ag and Arts.
Well, my nonprofit is called Ag Arts, A-G-A-R-T-S.
Ag Arts.
Right.
Thank you, Mary Swander, Ag Arts Extraordinaire Outreach.
Thank you.
Outreach
Ken. You got to come over and maker. You got to win the prize.
We'll see. We'll see what I can come up with on the cat yowling on the back fence. Actually, as a bird person, the buzzard on the dead horse, that one ought to work. That one ought to come up with something.
Start there.
I'll be on it.
Buzzard.
You've spun your magic. We'll see what we can come up with.
Thank you, Pat.
When is the date? The
deadline is January 15th.
January 15th.
Yeah.
All right.
You've got time. Everybody's like, I don't have time to do this.
Yeah.
In a couple months.
And I'll put it in my calendar. We'll have revisitation of this.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yep. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you.
See ya.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our next guest, Grace Lake, is working with COVID for Kids. Grace, can you tell us what you're doing to promote COVID awareness and all issues COVID with our younger set?
I was raising money for bracelets so that kids, when they get vaccinated, they get these little bracelets and then they wear it everywhere. And people are aware that the vaccine is helping and is here for kids.
Grace, where did you get this interesting idea?
It was last May. My 12th birthday was coming up. And I was thinking, I didn't want presents. What if people donated money so that I could buy wristbands?
And how has this gone? How did you promote this? How are you doing with your campaign?
I'm doing very well. I'm giving these bracelets to different clinics and departments where kids get vaccinated. And so far, people have really been loving them.
Why do you think that is?
I think maybe it's because we're trying to get our community back to normal and trying to stop the spread of COVID and trying to help everyone get together and be normal again.
So, Grace, we hear lots of adults talking about COVID pretty much all the time. But I'm interested in your view of COVID and how it's affected you as a younger person in our community. What would you like to share with us about your COVID experience?
So my little sister Caroline has a heart and lung disease, PVS, and my family has had to quarantine and stay away from everyone else. So I've been doing school virtual and haven't been able to see some of my friends in a very long time. And it's been hard, but now that I'm vaccinated and my little sisters are halfway vaccinated, it's getting better.
So what was it like not seeing your friends? Did you have Zoom conversations with them? Were you able to come up with other ways to stay in touch with them? Or did you have to kind of retreat into another world?
I did do some Zoom with some of my friends, and I've been able to see some of them through soccer, but some of them I haven't seen in over a year, and that's been very hard.
Now, what do your friends think about your bracelet campaign? Are they helping you? Are you getting other kids involved?
They're helping me out and cheering me on, and it's very nice to have such great friends.
I bet. So, what did you, when you got vaccinated, how did that make you feel? Were you a little bit afraid? Were you excited? What was going through your mind as that nurse was getting ready to give you that shot?
I was, at first when I heard I'd be able to get vaccinated, I was very excited, which is unusual because in the past when I've gotten my flu shot, haven't been so excited. But then when the nurse was getting out the needle, I felt a wave of nervousness sweep over me. And then it happened so quickly that when it was over, I felt a sense of peace and happiness that I'd done my part and am vaccinated, helping everyone out in the community.
Now, friends of your age range, what would you tell them about getting vaccinated? Would you have some advice for them?
Yes, I tell them that if you get vaccinated, then when you get sick with COVID, it won't be as bad. You'll be better protected. And then if that happens to everyone, slowly the circle of people who are able, who are immune compromised, can get vaccinated. They won't get as sick, and COVID will hopefully slow. It'll bring our world back to a little bit of normal, help us all go back to school, help us all do what we love, and be with our family again.
Well, that sounds like a good thing. Tell me more about your bracelet campaign. So you take bracelets to local places where vaccines are given, and then those bracelets are given to kids. Is that right?
Yes, when the kids get their shot, then they're handed this little baggie with a little card designed by a local artist, Tim Reed, explaining my story, and they get their bracelet, which is rainbow-colored and says, Kids Kicking COVID and I'm Saving Lives.
Kids Kicking COVID and I'm Saving Lives. Makes me wish I was a kid again. I'd like a rainbow bracelet to wear to show that I've been vaccinated. I think that's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what are you looking forward to once we have COVID under control? What do you think is going to be the most important thing to you?
I'm really excited to be able to go to middle school and to see my family and be with my friends.
Be with your friends. That's a big deal. I mean, all of us want to be with our friends. Do you think it's more important for kids or adults?
I'm not sure. It's hard because kids are in a state where they are growing up and changing a lot versus grown-ups. They're already adults. They aren't going through their teen years or developing as much. So I'd say sometimes it's harder for kids, but it's taking a toll on both.
Okay, I can see that. Now, some parents are a little bit worried about vaccinating their kids. From a kid's perspective, what would you say to a parent that was a little bit hesitant?
In the end, when your child is vaccinated, they'll be safer and they'll be helping the community be safer. In the end, you're saving someone's life, and that's what really matters.
That's what really matters. So it does really matter. Now, earlier we had a guest who talked about the Nutcracker and getting together in crowds. Do you feel comfortable with that now, or is that something that you would hesitate about?
I'm hesitating to go to places like that, even though I do love the Nutcracker, because of my little sister having this heart and lung disease.
Now, what other kind of things do you think you've missed out on since COVID started? I know that it's been almost a couple years. Does anything stand out besides missing your friends and school and sort of being removed from everybody? What other ways has this changed your life, do you think, Grace?
I think my sister and I, even though we've been stuck at home together, we've gotten closer, and, well, both of my sisters, I've learned that it's really valuable to have this time with your family, and that's been a bonus.
That's been a bonus, wow. What do they say? There's always some sort of silver lining in a dark cloud, so you found that in becoming closer with your sisters, and you've also found it in your bracelet campaign, I think, right?
Yes.
Now, I want to ask you one more thing, Grace, if I can. What do you think this COVID time has taught you in terms of what you might want to be when you reach that state known as adulthood?
Well, I've always wanted to be a doctor, and teacher has always been an option. I love writing, and so an author has been a good idea. But I see what doctors and nurses are doing, and that's turning out to be one of my main ideas of what to be when I grow up.
Well, sounds like, Grace Lake, you are well on your way to being part of the helping professions with your campaign of bracelets. Tell us a little bit more about what it's called again.
It's called Kids Kicking COVID.
Kids Kicking COVID. And how does a kid get a bracelet?
They go to a place to get vaccinated, like McFarland Clinic in Ames and Marshalltown, the Story County Public Health Department, the Boone County Health Department, several Hy-Vees, Walgreens, Polk County Health Department. They just get vaccinated and they'll be handed a little baggie with a bracelet.
All right. Well, Grace Lake, thank you for what you're doing to help kids and our communities kick COVID. Have a happy holiday season, okay?
You too. Thank you.
Wow. That was an inspiring kid, Mike Murphy.
Indeed. Indeed. Makes me wonder what I was doing at that age.
Well, we weren't kicking COVID. I hope we were doing something useful for our communities, but in my case, I'm pretty sure I wasn't. We talked about the Nutcracker earlier. Mike, have you been to the Nutcracker?
Well, I'm going to say maybe five 7 years ago, I went to a pretty radical version in Kansas City. It was by the People's Liberation Big Band and the Owens Cox Dance Troupe, and it was both from a musical perspective and a dance perspective. It really pushed the envelope, but it was really quite amazing, actually.
Now, I know we're on the radio, but I have to ask, what makes them radical nutcracker?
Well, I mean, the music had a lot of different edge. You know, in some ways it was big band and jazzy. In other pieces, it was almost had a heavy metal aspect to it. So it was just a bold interpretation, I would say.
Did you enjoy it?
I did, very much.
Wow. You know, when I think of Christmas, I think of two musical pieces, kind of diverse, but for me, equally funny, The Nutcracker and these tuba symphonies. Have you been to a tuba symphony?
I have not.
Well, I went to a tuba caroling a couple of years ago in Ames, and I have to admit, it's one of the funniest classic music pieces I've ever seen.
Wow.
But I do wish I could have seen a radical nutcracker. Somehow that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, indeed it was. Yeah.
Now, remember, folks, Mike is a big Grateful Dead fan, so who knows what a radical nutcracker really means.
Hmm.
I heard Pat Schlarbaum's piece on bad poetry with Mary Swander. Now, Mary Swander's our poet laureate in Iowa, and I guess there's a certain irony that she's sponsoring a bad poetry contest. Have you ever written any bad poetry?
Is there any other kind?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say that in front of Mary Swander.
Right. No, I of course I have. Yes. Yeah.
I think that bad poetry is one of the things we do in our, I don't know, in our first heartbreak breakup. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good example. I think limericks tend to drift into that area quite often.
I have to confess, I'm not a big poetry reader. I think it was a bad middle school teacher. How about you? Are you a poetry fan?
You know, I love to hear a poet reading her or his own words as opposed to reading it off the page. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about poetry that sort of reading it off the page just doesn't, I don't know, I always feel kind of, and what next? Where's the story?
Right.
But when you see somebody who wrote it and they have such passion in their body language, their voice, it does change things.
It does.
I grew up in Fresno. There was a great poet, Philip Levine, and I had the opportunity to see him perform his poetry a few times, and I was always amazed at how poetry changed as a form of spoken word.
Yes, absolutely.
Mike, we're approaching the holidays. Does your family have any holiday traditions that you think are radical and funny?
No. I think the big thing, that tradition that's evolved over the years is singing the 12 Days of Christmas, where everyone picks one day out of a hat, and so you don't know who is going to have what. And, yeah.
I think for the rest of the holiday season, I might just kind of goose some of our guests and ask them, what's the weirdest holiday tradition your family has? So be thinking, if you have any good ones, send us to them at KHOI. Maybe we'll want to follow up with a question. Every family's got one, whether it's going to the Nutcracker, going to Tuba Christmas, singing the 12 Days out of tune. It can be a number of things. So we're going to wrap it up for today. KHOI provides a platform for citizen and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI, your community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Thanks to my engineer and interim station manager, Mike Murphy, for helping out today. We heard from Sarah Nelson, ISU Extension, talking about this year's 40th anniversary celebration Nutcracker performances. We also heard about the Bad Poetry Contest sponsored by Iowa Poet Laureate Mary Swander. Here's your opportunity, you lovesick and heartbroken Iowans, to submit your bad poetry. Remember that you can also hear Local Talk online at khoifm.org and find links to our guests and information you heard about during this program. Our website is khoifm.org. Please consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station. To support us, visit the website and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by Morning Masterpieces. On tomorrow's program, we'll hear from lots of interesting guests, so stay tuned. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And see you again on the radio.